couch and went to the head. By the time she was back, Saba was standing naked at the little tea dispenser that had been provided for the exclusive use of the president. Saba had been with her for almost a decade now, and if his age showed a little in the softness of his belly and the roundness of his face, he was still a very pretty man. Sometimes, seeing him like this, she wondered whether she was aging as gracefully. She hoped so, or, if not, that he didn't notice. "Another beautiful morning in the corridors of power, huh?" he said. Budget hearings in the morning, trade approval in the afternoon, and Carrie Fisk and her fucking association of worlds. "And fish on Friday," he said, turning to hand her a bulb of hot tea. As little time as people's homes spent on the float, she might as well have had earther cups, but she never would. What's an association of worlds? "That's the question, isn't it?" Drummer said. "Right now, it's a couple dozen colonies that feel like I'd listen to them better if they spoke with one voice." "Are they right?" He took another bulb for himself and leaned against the wall. He had a weirdly intense way of listening. More than his eyes, it was what made him pretty. Drummer sat on the couch, scowled at nothing in particular and everything in general. "Yes," she said at last. "And so you don't like them?" "I don't dislike them," Drummer said and took a sip of her tea. It was green and flavored with honey, and still just a little too hot. "They've been around since Sandrani, in one form or another. It's all been sternly worded press releases and political grandstanding."
"And now?"
"Sternly worded press releases, grandstanding, with occasional meetings," she said. "But that actually means something. I didn't used to have to make room on the agenda for them. Now it seems like I do."
"What a freehold."
"Oberon is more the issue," she said. "There's talk that they're making progress toward a universal polypeptide cross-generator."
"And what is that when it's at home?"
It was a mechanism for pouring whatever toxic, half-assed soup the biospheres of the scattered planets had come up with into one end of a machine and getting something that humanity could eat out of the other. Which meant sometime in the next 10 or 15 years, the effective end of Sol System's monopoly on soil and farming substrates. And it meant Oberon was about to become the new superpower in the wide-flung paths of the human diaspora, provided that Earth and Mars didn't decide to fly a navy out through the gates and start the first interstellar war. All assuming, of course, that the breakthrough wasn't vapor and tricks, which she wasn't ready to discount. Every great nation, they said, was founded on a knife and a lie. "I'm not supposed to talk about that," she said. "I'm sorry. I shouldn't have mentioned it." Saba's face went hard for a moment, but he pushed it back into a smile again. He hated it when she closed him out of things, but however much she trusted him, however much the Union Security Division had cleared him, he wasn't in the chain of authority. Drummer had spent too much of her life enforcing security protocols to ignore them now. "The upshot is," she said, trying to bring him in enough to solve his feelings and still not say anything compromising, "that Freehold is, among other things, a warning to Oberon not to get too cocky. And Carrie Fisk and the Association of Worlds is sniffing around to see if there's any opportunities in it for them, including how far they can push me." Saba nodded and, to her mild disappointment, started to get dressed.
"So, more palace intrigue, Savisa," he said.
"Comes down to that," Drummer said, apologizing and also being angry for apologizing, even if it was only by implication. Saba saw the storm in her almost before she knew it was there. He stepped over to her, knelt at her feet, and put his head in her lap. She coughed out a laugh and patted his hair again.
It was an obeisance that he didn't mean, and she knew it. He knew it too. But even if it didn't mean he was actually abasing himself before her, it still meant something. "You should stay another night," she said. "I shouldn't. I have crew and cargo and a reputation as a free man to maintain." The laughter in his voice pulled the sting a little bit. "You should come back soon, then," she said, "and stop hooking up with all the girls on Medina. I would never be unfaithful to you." "Damned right you wouldn't," Drummer said, but there was laughter in her voice, too, now. Drummer knew that she wasn't an easy woman to love, or even to work with. There weren't many people in the vast span of the universe that could navigate her moods, but Saba was one of them, was the best at it of anyone. The system made its broken bamboo talk. Vaughn, making the first approach of the day. Soon there would be briefings and meetings and conversations off the record with people she liked or trusted or needed, but never all three at once. She felt Saba's sigh more than she heard it. "Stay," she said. "Come with me." "I love you." "Te amo, Kamina," he said, and rose to his feet. "And I will flitter off to Medina and be back so quickly you'll hardly know I was gone." They kissed once, and then he left, and the cabin seemed empty, hollow as a bell. The system made another little talk. "I'll be there in 5, she said. "Yes, ma'am," Vaughn replied. She dressed, did her hair, and was in the office in slightly less than 15 minutes, but Vaughn didn't chide her for it. "What's up first today?" she asked as he handed her a little cup of white kibble and sauce. His hesitation was almost too small to notice, but only almost. "Message came in from Captain Holden of the Rocinante." "Sum it up?" The hesitation was more pronounced this time. "Perhaps you should watch it, ma'am." The meeting room was on the outermost deck of the People's Home Drum. Coriolis in the Void City was trivial to anyone who'd spent time on a ring station, but outsiders who'd only known mass and acceleration gravity before still found it bothersome. The walls were a pearlescent gray, the table a veneer of blonde bamboo over titanium that was bolted straight to the deck. Drummer sat at its head, seething. Most of the others around her, Emily Santos Baca, Ahmed McCahill, Taryn Hong, and all the other representatives of the board and budget office, knew her well enough to gauge her mood and tread lightly. The poor man making the presentation had never met her before. "It's been a question of priorities," the man said. His name was Fayez Okoye Sarkis, and he'd come to speak on behalf of some kind of non-governmental, non-academic group that pushed for science research. Chernif Institute, based out of Ganymede and Luna. Over the last decades, really since the bombardment of Earth, the vast, vast majority of research has been in increasing food yield and infrastructure. And, mostly, it's been reverse-engineering the technology that made things like the protomolecule and the ring station. Every planet we've been to has had artifacts and old technologies. "Yes," Drummer said, meaning, "get on with it." Okoye Sarkis smiled, like he was used to people finding him charming. "When my wife was an undergraduate back in the day," he said, "her fieldwork involved tracking rodent species that had adapted to live in high radiation zones, old reactors and fission test sites. They had evolved to fit into environments that were specifically created by humans. Well, we're those rodents now. We're adapting ourselves into spaces and environments that were left behind by the vanished species or groups of species that created all this. The changes in technology we've seen are immense, and they promise to be just the beginning.
Okay, Drummer said. Okoye Sarkis took a drink of water from a bulb. The furrows in his forehead said he knew he was losing her.
Hopefully it would make him tighten the presentation up, skip the boring parts, and get to what he wanted so she could say no and get back to her job. There has been a lot of speculation about what sort of beings built all the things we've found, whether they were conscious individuals like us or some kind of hive mind, whether they were one species in a community or a variety of interconnected species acting in concert, whether, and I know this sounds weird, whether they had the same relationship to matter that we do. There's been a lot of great thought, great theory. What there hasn't been is testing. The Chernyev Institute wants to be the spearhead for a new generation of scientific research into the deepest questions that the ring gates embody. Who or what built them? What happened to those species between the time they launched Phoebe and the creation of the Sol Gate? Did they leave records that we can translate and understand? Our belief is that somewhere in the systems, on the far side of the gates, or within the gates themselves, we will find something that acts like a kind of Rosetta Stone, something that places all the other discoveries in context. Our goal is to crack the present work in materials science, high and low energy physics, biology, botany, geology, even the philosophy of science, wide open. Drummer leaned back in her chair, tilted her head. So, you think the problem is that things aren't changing fast enough?
Well, I think that progress is always better and more efficient when...
Because it seems to me, Drummer interrupted, that we're on the ragged edge of being able to deal with what's already on our plate. I don't see how more growing pains are going to help us.
This is meant to help us with growing pains, the man said.
He delivered the line with a certainty and authority that Drummer respected as a performance. He was a charismatic little shit. She saw why they'd sent him. To her left, Emily Santos-Baca cleared her throat in a way that might have meant nothing, but if it meant anything, it meant a lot. Drummer was being an asshole. With a conscious effort, she pulled her irritation back.
Fair enough, she said. And how does the union fit in with this?
There are several things that the transport union can do to help with the effort. The first being, of course, a contract to grant passage to Institute ships. We've got fieldwork proposals for sites on half a dozen planets whose preliminary surveys look most promising. But we have to get there first. His grin was an invitation for her to smile back.
That makes sense, Drummer said.
His grin lost its edge. The other thing that we'd like to open a conversation about, the transport union is in a singular position. The fruits of our work stand to benefit the union as much or more than anyone else in any system.
And so you'd like us to underwrite your work, Drummer said. Is that it?
I had some more preliminaries that help lay the groundwork for why, Okoye Sarkis said, but yes.
You understand, we aren't a government, Drummer said. We're a shipping union. We take things from one place to another and protect the infrastructure that lets us do that. Research contracts aren't really in our line.
Okoye Sarkis looked around the table, searching for sympathetic eyes.
Maybe he even found a few.
Drummer knew that her reaction might have been different if the proposal had been made a day earlier. But Holden's message from Freehold.
The Institute respects that, ma'am, Okoye Sarkis said.
This is a very new project, but one I think has the potential to yield real benefits for everyone. I have a breakdown of our mission proposals I can leave with you, and whoever in your staff wants to look at them. All right, Drummer said. And the passage agreement. I don't mean to press, but we're still getting our backers together, and the fees. Give us your proposals, Drummer said. The board can go over them. Whatever conclusion they make about reducing or waiving the contract fees will be fine with me. Thank you, Madam President. That's wonderful. Thank you very much. The scientist practically bowed himself out of the room. Drummer ticked off the last entry in her morning agenda. The afternoon's list looked just as long and at least equally irritating. Santos Baca caught her eye and lifted an eyebrow. It's an interesting proposal. It should make for a lively debate, she said, meaning, I see you just gave the board another issue to deal with. It's important that the board be involved in any serious decisions, Drummer said, meaning, suck it up. Emily Santos Baca chuckled, and half against her will, Drummer smiled, but only for a few seconds. She suffered through the small talk and pleasantries that came before and after all meetings like social plague, then went back to her private office as soon as she could. Vaughn, or one of his staff, had left a bowl of soy pasta with mushrooms and a glass of wine for her. She started with the wine. She pulled up the display of the full Sol system. Planets, void cities, stations, the asteroids swirling in the complex orbital dances where gravity and system geography made pools of stability. It looked like images of a snowstorm on Earth. She'd never seen snow to know how accurate that was. She cut out most of the data, simplifying it enough for a human eye to make sense of. There was people's home in Mars's orbit, but not near the planet, and there, near the ring gate, was Independence. She placed a query, and the Malaclipse appeared, a single bright yellow dot that seemed like it was almost on top of people's home, like the ship had never left. It was a failure of scale. That superposition of light in the display was 100,000 kilometers by now, more than the circumference of Earth twice over and getting larger every second. It was just that the unbridgeable distance between her and Saba was nothing compared to the vastness around them. Here in the system, and then out in all the other systems beyond the gates. Even for a woman born to the void, it was overwhelming. And everyone seemed to want her to control it for them, to take responsibility for it all, so that they could feel like someone, somewhere, was in charge. She'd never have said it out loud, but there was part of her that missed the way it had been in her youth. The belt had been the OPA. Earth and Mars had been the enemy. That had seemed overwhelming at the time. It was only everything that had happened since that had made it seem small and manageable by comparison. A nostalgia for the age that had forged her into who she was, that had given her all the skills she'd needed, and then changed into a place where half the time she felt like an imposter in her own clothes. The Rocinante was light hours away through the gates, light centuries by more traditional paths. She pictured Holden as if he were across the table. She took a deep breath, let it out slowly, and then started the recording. Captain Holden, I've got your status report about the situation on Freehold. Politely put, your proposed solution isn't going to work. Chapter 6. Holden. Politely put, Drummer said on the screen, your proposed solution isn't going to work. What you're doing would fundamentally change the Union. Jailing someone isn't a thing we do. We're a transport union, not a police force. We don't have prisons. We don't have prisoners. We don't have judges. We have contracts. When someone breaks the terms of a contract, we object. Then we levy fines and penalties.
And then, if they still won't do what they said, we stop playing with them. What we don't do is arrest them.
She sounds pissed, Alex said.
Holden paused the message playback. The ops deck was dim, the way Alex liked it. The air recycler clicked and the drive hummed through the bones of the ship, as familiar as silence.
Yeah, Holden said. That doesn't sound like her happy voice, does it?
Alex scratched at his beard and gave Holden a sympathetic shrug.
You want to finish that someplace private?
I don't think that'll make it better. Holden took the pause back off, and Drummer sprang back into motion. The other thing we don't do is let everyone who captains a ship on our registry make their own policies for the Union as a whole. What you did on Freehold doesn't get to set precedent for what I have to do on every other system that decides to break the rules. I sent you out there with a mission to deliver a message. Not negotiate. Not broker deals. You were there because it was important for everyone else who's watching, and everyone's watching, to see what happens when you break the terms of your contract with the Transport Union. So, it was theater first, and then an execution, Holden said to the screen. Not that she could hear him. Still, she paused, looked down, and gathered herself as if she had. My problem now, she said, is how to fix what you've broken with the least amount of damage. I will be consulting with the board and our legal counsel, and when we decide what needs to happen, I'll tell you. And you'll do it. I really hope this is clear enough that it doesn't confuse you.
I'm getting the feeling she may not actually like me, Holden said. She's working herself up a little, Alex said. I wouldn't take it personally.
For now, Drummer said, I am instructing you to proceed on to Medina with Governor Houston. I will have someone ready to meet your ship when you dock. At that time, I will expect you to read a statement that I will put together for you. It may be an apology. It may be a clarification of the Transport Union rules. Whatever it is, I'll deliver it to you before you get there. And you'll recite it word for word. You don't get to make the universe be what you want just by saying it, Holden. There are other people who live here, too. Next time, show some respect. The message ended. Alex blew out a long, slow breath.
Well, maybe take it a little personally, he said as Holden closed the message out.
The screen returned to its series of rolling system reports. Drive output, environmental stability, waste heat management. The Rocinante doing what she did best, what she always did. The knot in his stomach sat there quietly. He couldn't tell if it was anger or disappointment or something altogether else. Alex cracked his knuckles.
You've got that look, he said.
No, I don't, Holden said. I don't look like anything.
She's got a point. There's a lot of colonies out there. If we're going to start hauling in bad guys from all of them, well, there's a lot of mission creep in that. Telling them they can't come play if they won't be nice? It's rough, but it doesn't change what the Transport Union is, you know.
It's more convenient, Holden said, more sharply than he'd intended. It is. No, I see that. I understand that it's easier to run the Union if everything's in terms of who's violated the terms of the contract and withholding service and give it a few more decades so the colonies are able to support themselves. Maybe cutting off trade will be a slap on the wrist. But the fact of the matter right now, it's a death sentence.
Maybe, Alex said. What I heard about Baragon Complex and Oberon, they're already...
This isn't Baragon Complex or Oberon. This is Freehold. If we cut them off for 3 years, the colony would collapse and they'd all starve. So right now, yeah, she's saying we should kill them. Only she's phrasing it so it sounds like it's just a natural consequence of their choices and not also ours.
Well, yeah, Alex said.
But Holden wasn't done. The words kept pushing their way out of him. They didn't vote for Drummer, he said, tapping hard on the screen.
They can't appeal her decisions, and she has the power of life and death over them. She needs to be held to a higher standard than whatever is most convenient. And in every military service in history, when the commander gave an immoral command, it was the duty of the soldiers to disobey it.
Every military service in history?
All the good ones.
All right, Alex said.
Then a moment later, they didn't elect us either.
Exactly, that's my point.
Right, Alex said. So we're agreeing with each other.
Yes, but it still kind of sounds like we're fighting.
It does, Holden said, and leaned back. His crash couch shifted under him, hissing. The tightness in his gut hadn't lessened at all. He'd really hoped it would.
Shit. You think she's going to shut them out again? Put the quarantine back in place?
I don't know, Holden said. Except if she was going to do that, she'd probably make us take Houston back to die with his friends. And it doesn't do great things for your political dog and pony show when the captain of one of your pet gunships starts refusing your orders. She'll have to give us this one.
That sounds right, Alex agreed. Next one's going to be interesting, though.
Yeah. They were quiet for a moment.
He knew Alex was going to speak even before the words came.
Decades of living and working in the same place meant you never had to ask for someone to pass the salt at galley time. This was just the same.
If you want, we could yell at each other some more.
Thanks, Holden said. Alex nodded. It was an open invitation and only half a joke. He consulted his gut again, then pulled himself up and headed for the lift. Alex didn't ask where he was going. He probably knew. The galley still had the ghost of the ginger tea Clarissa drank to soothe her stomach, but neither she nor Amos was there now. The food dispenser showed their supply levels, and he saw them without really seeing them. He'd lived in the Rocinante longer than any place else in his life. He knew the ship better than he knew himself. As he walked down the corridor to their room, he tried to shrug off the bitterness and the anger, the sense of guilt that was rising in his throat. Even so, he knew she'd see it. Naomi was in the crash couch, her arm thrown over her eyes, but her breath didn't have the deepness of sleep. Her nap was already over, or else it hadn't yet begun. She smiled, and the deep lines at the sides of her mouth were beautiful.
"How bad is it?" she asked, even before she took her arm away.
Holden took a deep breath and let it hiss out through his teeth. His gut didn't loosen, but it did shift. The anger turned toward something deeper. Grief, maybe. He crossed his arms. She shifted to look at him. The gray at her temples had started appearing a few years ago and was slowly spreading. There were lines at the corners of her eyes that the anti-aging meds they all took now weren't going to rub away. They were beautiful, too.
"I think it may be time for us to do something else," he said.
"For me to do something else, anyway." She shifted, the crash couch moving to adjust to her. If there had been a joke waiting, an impulse to lighten the moment, it died when she looked at him. Seeing her reacting to him told him how serious he really was, how bad he looked.
"Walk me through it," she said.
He gave her the basics, what Drummer had said, what he and Alex had talked about, what sense he'd made of it, and with every word, every phrase, he felt a confusion he hadn't known he was suffering start to clear. Just saying it to her, knowing that even if he got the words or thoughts wrong, she would hear the meaning underneath them, let him find his own clarity. The tightness in his gut didn't go away. "When we were hunting down pirates, I could accept their surrender," he said. Even the Free Navy could have set down arms and we'd have arrested them. But now, I'm working for a bureaucratic system that's willing to kill people as a matter of policy. I don't feel like I'm enforcing rules. I feel like an executioner, and I don't think I can do it. Naomi shifted, making room for him on the crash couch. He lay down beside her. The couch adjusted to their combined mass. She made a low sound, part hum and part sigh. Tough to do our jobs, then. These colonies, they're all dependent on the transport union. And maybe they won't always be, but until they're self-sustaining, they should have a voice in how the union makes the rules, how it enforces them. They didn't elect Drummer. They didn't elect any of them. Walker, Sandrani, Pa. The others weren't cutting off trade. Drummer is. And yes, I know, looking at it, this was probably inevitable. Maybe it's a miracle it took this long to happen, but now it has happened, and when one thing changes, other things change too. A voice came from the galley. Bobby talking to someone, Alex or Amos or Clarissa. He didn't hear the response, but Bobby laughed a little at it. The knot in his gut grew heavier. "I can put out a press release," he said, and the words seemed to sink him deeper into the gel. "Get the message out to all the colonies about what Drummer wants to do, why I think it's wrong. Try to lead some kind of, I don't know, reform coalition? Maybe talk to the Association of Worlds, see if they want to take it on?" "Big fight to pick," Naomi said, neither approving nor disapproving, just saying it because it was true. "It'll mean grounding the Rossi, or keeping to one system for a while. There's a lot of trade between Earth and Mars still. Ganymede, Ceres. Maybe there are some colony worlds with enough infrastructure in place that we could find a niche there. Or make one. Or I could tell a few people what's going on. They already know," Naomi said. "Drummer sent us out here to make a statement. Everyone's already watching. Nothing you've said isn't already on the news and discussion feeds all around the colonies. So, maybe I could let someone else take point on this battle," he said, closing his eyes. "Just get some in-system contracts and see what happens. It's important, but I don't know. But I'm tired. Too tired to fight this one. Or..." He opened his eyes, turned to his side. Her head was tilted the way it was when she hid behind her hair, only without the hiding. Her mouth tensed. Her eyes met his. "You remember when we first got the Rossi?" she said. "We were on the run from, oh, I think everyone, flying this stolen ship. You asked if we wanted to sell her, split the money, and all of us take an early retirement." He chuckled. She was worth more back then. "Retirement meant more years back then, too," she said. She wasn't laughing. "What if this isn't a decision you need to make for everyone?" "Meaning?" "We both know Alex is going to die in that pilot's chair. Bobby's at home here. Clarissa's health isn't great. And I don't know, but if she decides to try a skilled nursing facility on Ceres or something, I get the feeling Amos may go with her." Holden let that idea sink in. He didn't understand the bond between Amos and Clarissa, except that it was fierce and platonic and had lasted through years. If it was love, it didn't look like any version he'd ever experienced. But it didn't look like anything else, either. He ran his mind over the idea of Amos still in the Rosinante without Clarissa. He'd never considered it before. It was a melancholy prospect. "Yeah, maybe," Holden said. Then a moment later, "Yeah." We're getting up to the same age Fred was when he stroked out on a burn. And you've been on daily anti-cancer meds for more than half of your life now. It doesn't matter how good they are, that's going to take a toll on your system. Leave you a little more fragile. So the other thing we can do? Sell our shares. Head down to Titan. Pick a resort and enjoy our retirement. No, Holden thought. No, I will never leave this place and these people. This is my home. And no matter what the dangers and threats and fights are, I will stand this ground. This is where I belong, where we all belong. Only what came spilling out of his mouth was, God, that sounds wonderful. Let's do that. Naomi leaned forward, her brows furrowed. Really? Because I've got half a dozen other arguments I've been working on for why it's not a terrible idea. Oh yeah, hold on to those, Holden said. I'm going to flip my opinion back and forth for weeks. But right now, living in a dome on Titan with you sounds like the single best idea anyone has ever had. You wouldn't feel like it made you less of a man? Nope. That you were letting the universe down by not taking on every fight there was? Because I worked on that one for a while. I've got some good lines practiced up. Keep them, Holden said. You'll need them later. But right now, I'm sold. Her face relaxed. He could still see the woman she'd been when they were on the Canterbury. Time and age, sorrow and laughter had taken some of the curve out of her cheek, left her skin a little looser at the neck. They weren't young anymore. Maybe you could only really see that someone was beautiful when they'd grown into themselves. He moved to kiss her and drifted off the crash couch. With a thrust suddenly cut, leaning up had pushed him into the cabin, twisting as he floated. He reached back with his foot automatically, trying to hook it into one of the holds, but the ship was flipping, so it took a couple tries. Naomi had already braced herself in the frame of the crash couch. Well, Holden said, I guess Drummer changed her mind about letting Houston come to Medina. That's disappointing. Weird that Alex wouldn't sound the alert first, though, Naomi said, and then tapped her system console. Alex, everything all right?
I was about to ask you, the pilot said through the speaker. We have a change of plan?
Holden pulled his hand terminal out of his pocket.
Amos, did you just do a flip and burn?
Hey, Cap,
Amos's real voice said behind him as the big man floated into the doorframe.
Wasn't me. We got something going on?
A chill ran down Holden's back that had nothing to do with temperature. Naomi was already on it, querying the Rosie's logs and control systems, but Clarissa's voice came from the speaker before she could find anything. I received an alert from the air recyclers, she said, her reedy voice stronger than usual. I got a manual command from engineering to drop oxygen output to zero and flood nitrogen.
That's not good, Holden said. We shouldn't do that.
I had an aftermarket override in place.
No one changes my environmental settings without my say-so, Clarissa said, as calmly as if she didn't mean, my paranoia just saved our lives.
I'd like to know what's going on, though. Engineering, the machine shop, and the reactor are all locked down, Naomi said, scrolling through system screens faster than Holden could follow. I think I've got the drive shut down, but I can't...
But Holden was already pulling himself out of the room.
Amos hauled himself flat against the wall of the corridor as he flew past, then followed along behind him. Through the galley, to the lift, then down one level. His heart was tripping over, the pulse tapping at his eardrums, but it was just adrenaline, just fear. There wasn't anything wrong with the air. He hoped that was true. The brig wasn't really a brig so much as one of the crew cabins that had been set aside, the door controls isolated from the system and disabled on the inside. Over the years, nearly a dozen prisoners had spent days or weeks or months in it. Now, the door stood halfway open, the control panel flickering and throwing error codes. Holden pulled himself toward it cautiously. Doors and corners were where they got you. But when he reached it, he was already sure what he'd find. The cabin stood empty, apart from bits of floating debris. Anti-spalling cloth floated in ribbons. Bits of fluff from the mattress, like February snowflakes that never fell. Bright lines showed where the storage drawer had been pried off its runners and a length of the guide pulled free. A wall screen floated beside the bunk, and exposed electronics showed where the door locks had been shorted out. The governor of Freehold was nowhere to be seen.
"Well," Amos said, "that's new."
Chapter 7. Bobby. There was a certain luxury to the thrust gravity of steady acceleration. Hooking your nethers to a vacuum toilet was one of the indignities space travel occasionally forced you into. On the float, with nothing to pull your waste away, it was that or have pea globes sharing your living space. Being able to just sit on a toilet in the crew head and relax for a moment while you did your business was something to appreciate. The fact that it felt like a luxury was also probably not very dignified, if you looked at it too closely. Bobby was just reaching behind her for the cleaning pad dispenser mounted on the bulkhead when the gravity went off with no warning. The momentum of her twisting torso sent her floating off the toilet seat and into the air, pants still around her knees. Thankfully, the Rosie immediately fired up the vacuum system on the toilet and spared her having to dodge floating waste. While she stumbled through the air, tugging at her waistband, she yelled, "Rosie, get me the bridge!"
"Yo,"
Alex replied almost immediately. "Where are you? Not even a fucking warning light? I'm down on the head taking a leak and suddenly I'm trying to pull my pants up on the float."
"Wasn't my plan," Alex said. "It looks like... hold on."
The system link picked up Naomi's voice coming through a different channel. "Alex, everything all right?"
"I was about to ask you," Alex said. "We have a change of plan? Naomi? Bobby, I think we may have a situation."
All it took was the tone of Alex's voice. Bobby planted one foot against a bulkhead, took a handhold with the other, and yanked up her pants.
"Copy that," she said,
the flat, emotionless tones of the old Marine taking over.
"On the move."
She found Holden and Amos floating just inside the door of their makeshift brig when she arrived. They were examining a wall screen that someone had pried out of the wall. The prisoner wasn't there.
"How long has he been out?"
Bobby asked as she came to a stop with one hand on the doorframe.
"Rosie started throwing errors from this door almost an hour ago," Amos said with a grimace. "This is on me, Cap. Should have been paying attention, but I was..."
"Forget it," Holden said.
"Let's just keep him from doing any more damage.
He's down in engineering."
"If he was able to kill the drive and spin the ship," Bobby said.
"That's where he is," Holden said. "Naomi's working to keep him from making too big a mess, but she's working remotely, and this guy's demonstrated surprising technical skills."
"Options?"
Bobby asked. The tactical situation wasn't optimal. If the prisoner was locked in engineering and had also managed to seal off the machine shop above it, then they'd need to cut or breach two doors just to get to him. Even with Naomi hacking the control systems, physical proximity to the reactor gave Houston options she just didn't have, and Bobby didn't like him having. Holden drummed his fingers on his leg for a moment, the movement imparting an almost imperceptible spin to him as he floated. "If he feels like he has no way out, he might blow the reactor out of spite," Holden said, mirroring Bobby's own thoughts. "So a standard breach has to be the last choice. Amos, you're in charge of that. Have Clarissa help you hotwire the door sensor to the machine shop so you can cut it without Houston knowing. Then put a mining charge on the door to engineering and wait for my signal.
Got it,
Amos said, and pushed off down the corridor. He already had his terminal out and was saying,
Peaches, meet me at the machine shop hatch.
If I'm not breaching, then... Bobby started, but Holden cut her off with a shake of his head.
I want you using the aft maintenance hatch. You can come in from behind. Keep us from doing a very risky breach.
Okay, Bobby said, stretching the word out. But that access is unusable with a drive on.
Naomi will make sure it stays off.
And if she doesn't?
You'll get cooked, Holden said with a nod.
But we're playing against the clock here. We don't know how long we've got until Houston decides dying in a fireball is more romantic than jail.
Betsy won't fit into that tight maintenance crawl.
No, she won't, Holden agreed.
Pretty sure you can still kick this guy's ass, though.
Not in doubt.
Then gear up, Marine. You're going outside.
Bobby wasn't really much of a ship mechanic, but she knew how to turn a wrench or draw a straight bead with a welding torch. Over her last couple decades of making the Rosinante her home, she'd spent a fair amount of time outside the ship, sometimes with Amos, who called her Babs for a reason only he understood, and who often assumed she knew what she was doing even when she didn't. Sometimes with Clarissa, who occasionally slipped and called her Roberta, and who explained every procedure in the exhaustive detail you'd use with someone who knew nothing. And, almost without her knowing it, they'd become her family. She still had brothers and nieces and nephews back on Mars related to her by blood, but she rarely spoke to them. Even then, it was always in a recorded message, fired across space on the end of a laser. Instead, she had Amos, the gruff big brother who'd let her fuck up on a repair job and just laugh at her, but then fix it later and never mention it again. And she had Clarissa, the annoying know-it-all little sister who wrapped herself in rules and procedure lists and formality like a shell around her fragile center. And then Holden and Naomi, who couldn't help but become the parents of the ship. Alex, the best friend she'd ever had, and the person she'd realized recently she had every intention of growing old with, in spite of never having seen him naked. It was an odd group of people to fall in love with, to adopt as your own kin and tribe, but there it was, and she wasn't ever going back. And now, Payne Houston was threatening them.
You fucked up, man, she said to herself as she drifted to a stop over the reactor bay emergency access panel. You just fucked all the way up.
Repeat, Alex said quietly in her ear. Bobby realized she'd left the channel open and the volume low as she'd made the climb down from the crew airlock to the rear of the ship.
Nothing, she said, turning the volume back up. I'm in position.
Patching you back into the master channel,
Alex replied, and then suddenly there were half a dozen voices breathing in her ear.
Sound off, Holden said.
We got through the machine shop door okay, and Peaches says no alerts were triggered. Breaching charge is ready, just call it.
Amos's voice, calm and faintly amused. He could have been reporting football scores.
I've got the ROSI in diagnostic mode, so she's asking me to verify any orders coming from the engineering console, Naomi's voice said. But that can't last. Pretty soon he can start just breaking things the old-fashioned way.
Draper here. I'm outside the emergency access hatch.
How long once that door opens?
Bobby ran through the layout in her head. It was an old habit, beaten into her by years of training in the toughest military outfit humanity had ever created. Plan it through before you go in, because once the bullets start flying, the time for thinking is over. All you can do is move and react. 15 seconds to cycle the hatch closed, A few seconds to squeeze past the reactor housing. It's a tight fit. But a good 30 seconds to equalize the pressure, so that's our speed bump. Once the atmo and the crawl space is equalized, I can be through that inner hatch in less than 5. Naomi, can you keep our guest out of the controls for the next minute so we don't cook our only good Martian?
Hey, Cap, that's low,
Alex said with a laugh. Bobby found it reassuring and terrifying that they could joke at a time like this. Bobby, Naomi's voice said, gentle but firm, no way he gets that reactor while I'm alive.
Copy that. Draper's a go on your mark.
Holden simply said,
okay.
The hatch in front of her vibrated under the palm of her vacuum suit's glove as Naomi cycled it open. A faint puff of vapor escaped as the hatch popped open. Bobby pulled herself inside, squeezing into the curved space between the inner hull of the ship and the outer shielding of the Rossi's reactor core. The hatch began to cycle closed behind her.
Governor Houston, Holden said over the radio, I'm sending this over 1MC so I know you can hear me. It won't compromise your position at all to at least open a dialogue.
Bobby pulled herself around the curve of the reactor to the inner hatch. The panel glowed red with the lock symbol, and the status read, Neg Atmosphere. The timer in her HUD showed only 10 seconds had elapsed, so the outer door wasn't even finished cycling. Almost 40 seconds, then, before she could pop the inner hatch and go kick this Houston's ass up one side of the ship and down the other. She pulled the heavy recoilless pistol from the harness on her chest and double-checked the ammo counter. 10 self-propelled high-explosive anti-personnel rounds. If Houston forced her to shoot him, they'd be cleaning up red stains for a month. Bobby had served on ships most of her life. She wasn't scared of a little mopping.
Come on, man, Holden said. At this point, we can keep you from doing just about anything. Sooner or later, you'll need a snack.
To her surprise, Houston's voice answered.
No, found your mechanic's beer fridge down here. Had a big bag of sesame sticks in it, jalapeno flavored. Bit spicy for me, but still tasty.
Better not be drinking my fucking beer, Amos said in that same nonchalant voice.
Anyway, Holden cut in, we still have a situation. You're not going to be able to take the ship, and I'd really like to start using it again. How do we come to some sort of agreement?
Bobby heard the first hiss of the atmosphere system outside her suit. The pressurization was almost done. She held the pistol in her right hand and gripped the door with her left. The second it showed green, she'd be in the room with that asshole. The asshole said,
I don't know that we do. You're right. I can't get past that diagnostic lockdown. That was smart work, by the way. But I figure I can probably get the reactor back online from in here, and then I figure I can collapse the bottle if I just find the right wires to pull. You figure the same way?
Well, Holden started, but the light on the inner hatch clicked green, and Bobby yanked it open.
The main console of the reactor would be to her left as she entered the compartment. It was likely that Houston was using that workstation, so that was her first target. If she pushed off hard, she'd come out of the small hatch like a missile, do a quick flip to land feet first on the opposite bulkhead. From there, she'd have open sight lines to the entire engineering deck. Nowhere for Houston to hide. Bobby gripped the edge of the hatch and pulled with all her strength to launch herself into the room. She had to... Something crashed into the side of her helmet and sent her into a flat spin through the air. She tried to get her hands up to keep her from crashing face first into the bulkhead and only half succeeded. Her left arm crumpled under her, and she felt something tear with a wet heat in her shoulder. She bounced off the wall and saw Houston standing on the bulkhead above the access hatch, mag booted in place and holding a heavy fire extinguisher with a dent in the bottom. Miraculously, the gun was still in her hand. Blackness creeping in at the edge of her vision, Bobby tried to line up a shot. Houston launched himself off the wall with one strong kick and brought the extinguisher down on her hand in a baseball bat-style swing. She felt two of her fingers break, and the gun and extinguisher flew off in opposite directions across the room. The deck seemed to swim up to meet her. She caught a glimpse of Houston spinning off toward the ceiling. She managed to turn on the mags in her glove and pull herself down long enough to get her boots locked onto the deck plating. If this was going hand to hand, she'd want leverage, and that meant planting her feet. She turned the boots mags almost up to full and watched Houston catch himself on the ceiling. She spread her arms wide, though from the tearing sensation in her left shoulder, she didn't think that one was going to be much use. And the broken fingers in her right hand made grappling or throwing a punch problematic.
"You're lucky you're wearing that suit,"
Houston said, gulping to catch his breath.
"I put a dent in that helmet, would have knocked your brains out without it."
"And you," Bobby said, "are very lucky it's this suit. I've got another one."
"Well, we're gonna talk or we gonna dance?"
"They're playing my—"
Bobby started. Then Houston launched himself off the ceiling straight at her. She was expecting it. Getting someone else to talk while you threw a punch was an old trick. The moment he left the bulkhead above her, she was already shifting her body to the left and rotating through her hips. As Houston sailed past, she brought her right elbow into his chin. Houston's teeth slammed shut with a crunch that meant he'd cracked a few, then his whole body cartwheeled past her and into the wall with a thud. She kicked her mags off and pushed over to him, wrapping her right arm around his neck for a chokehold. It was unnecessary. His eyes were rolled up in his head, and he was breathing blood bubbles out of his ruined mouth. One and done, just like the old days.
"I put our guest to bed," Bobby said over the radio,
then hauled Houston over to the wall panel and removed the locks on the hatch. "Amos, take that bomb off the door before I open it, okay?" Bobby sat in the galley, her left arm in a sling and her right hand in a cast that the ship had spun for her out of carbon fiber. Holden sat across from her, a steaming cup of coffee on the table held down by the gentle 0.3G Alex was flying them at.
"So," Holden said, then paused to blow across the top of his coffee. "Turns out that guy had a few more skills than I clocked him for. Thanks for saving my ship."
"I kind of feel like it's mine, too," she said with a smile. Holden was Holden. He'd need to take the weight for every bad thing that happened, and to overstate his appreciation for the good ones. It's what made him him. He projected selfless heroism on everyone because that's what he wanted to see in people. It was the same thing that caused most of the problems in his life. Most people weren't who he wanted them to be, but this was a nice moment. Ship safe, no one dead, not even Houston. Though if someone didn't keep an eye on Amos, that might change.
"So it's funny you should say that," Holden said. He'd paused over his coffee long enough that she'd sort of forgotten what she said.
"Would you like to buy the ship from me?"
"I—" Bobby started, then—
"Wait, what?"
"Naomi and I are thinking of pulling the ripcord. We've been doing this shit for a lot of years. It's time to find a quiet spot somewhere. See how we like that for a while." It was more of a hit than anything Houston had managed. The ache started just below her ribs and spread up. She didn't know what it meant yet.
"Is everyone else on the crew?" Bobby said, then wasn't sure how to finish the sentence.
"No. As Naomi recently pointed out to me, Alex will die in that pilot's chair."
Whoever buys the ship will have to be okay with that. I can't speak for what Amos plans to do, you know, after.